Appendix Dalesh. Hassan Nisaba and Alamut Black. When the Prophet died in 4632 AM, known as the year 52 to Muslims, 4392 to Jews and Scotch Rite Masons, 4320 to Confucians and 632 to Christians, the true faith was almost immediately shattered by conflict between the Shiite and Sunnite parties. More than a century of religious and civil warfare followed. And by 4760 AM, the Shiites themselves had split and given birth to a subsect known as the Ismailis or Ismailians. It was out of this group that Hassani Sabah formed the Order of the Assassins in 5090 AM. Ismailian religion had already at that date become a nine-level affair in the manner typical of mystical secret societies. Those of the lowest grade, for instance, were merely informed that Al-Quran contained an allegorical meaning in addition to its surface teachings, and that their salvation lay in following orders. As a neophyte progressed through the various grades, more and more of the allegories would be explained, and a doctrine would gradually emerge, which is, in essence, that taught by all the mystics of East and West Buddhists, Taoists, Vedantists, Rosicrucians, etc. The doctrine is, in important aspects, unspeakable, which is why the trainee required an imam, the Ismailian equivalent of a guru, to guide him in the non-verbal aspects. The ninth and highest grade, however, had no parallel except in very strict Theravada Buddhism. In this ninth grade, which Hassan attained shortly before founding the Hashishim, it was taught that even the personal mystical experience of the seeker, his own encounter with the absolute, or the void, or the hodgepodge, or God, or goddess, or whatever one chooses to call it, should be subject to the most merciless analysis and criticism, and that there is no guide superior to reason. The Ismailian adept, in short, was one who had achieved supreme mystical awareness but refused to make even that into an idol. He was a total atheist anarchist, subject to no authority but his own independent mind. Such men are dangerous, as Caesar observed, and certainly they are dangerous to the Caesars. The Ismailians were being persecuted throughout the Muslim world, and strong efforts were being made to exterminate them entirely when Hassani Sabah became imam of the whole movement. It was Hassan's cynical judgment, and many illuminated beings such as the lamas of Tibet have agreed with him, that most people have no aspiration or capacity for much spiritual and intellectual independence. He thereupon reorganized the Ismailians in such a way as to allow and encourage those of small mind to remain in the lower grades. The tools of this enterprise were the famous Garden of Delights in his castle at Alamut, a good duplication of the paradise of Al-Quran, complete with the beautiful and willing houris the Prophet had promised to the faithful, and a certain magic chemical. Those of the lowest grade were brought to Alamut, given the miraculous concoction, and set loose for several hours in the Garden of Delights. They came out convinced that they had truly visited heaven, and that Hassani Sabah was the most powerful holy man in the world. They were assured, furthermore, that if they obeyed every order, even at the cost of their own lives, they would return to that paradise after death. These men became the first sleeper agents in the history of international politics. Where the three major contending religions of that time in the Near East, Christianity, Judaism, and Orthodox Islam, insisted that it was an unforgivable sin to deny one's faith, Hassan taught that Allah would forgive such little white lies when they served a worthy purpose. Thus his agents were able to pass themselves off as Christians, Jews, or Orthodox Muslims, and infiltrate any court, holy order, or army at will. Since the other religions had the above-mentioned prohibition against such deception, they were unable to infiltrate the Ismailians in turn. The use of these agents as assassins is discussed passim in the novel, and Weishaupt's opinion that Hassan had discovered the moral equivalent of war is an interesting commentary. Hassan never had to send an army into battle. An army sent against him was soon stopped by the sudden and unexpected deaths of their generals. One of Hassan's successors was Sinan, who moved the headquarters of the cult from Alamut to Messiak, and may, or may not, have written the letter about Richard the Lionhearted, which George recalls in the Third Trip. Sinan, contemporaries claimed, performed miracles of healing, conversed with invisible beings, and was never seen to eat, drink, or perform the functions of urination and excretion. He was also credited with telepathy and with the ability to kill animals by looking at them. It was he, and not Hassan Isaba, as many popular books state, who ordered two of the lower members of the order to commit suicide in order to impress a visiting ambassador with his power over his followers. The two obeyed, leaping from the castle wall into the abyss below. Sinan also made attempts to form an alliance with the Knights Templar to drive both Orthodox Christians and Orthodox Muslims out of the arena, but this evidently fell through. The Hashishim were finally crushed, despite their powerful espionage and assassination network, when the whole Middle East was overrun by hordes of Mongols who came from so far away that they had not been infiltrated. It took several centuries for the Hashishim to make a comeback as the non-violent Ismailian movement of today, under the leadership of the Aga Khan. Finally, it was at Hassan Isaba's death that he allegedly uttered the aphorism for which he is best known and which is quoted several times in the novel. Nothing is true, all is permissible. The Orthodox Muslim historian Juvaini, who may have invented this whole episode, adds that as soon as these blasphemous words passed his lips, Hassan's soul plunged to the depths of hell. Ever since Marco Polo recorded the story of the Garden of Delights, Western commentators have identified Hassan's magic chemical as pure hashish. Recent scholarship, however, has thrown this into doubt. It is clear that hashish and other marijuana preparations were well known in the Near East for thousands of years before Hassan ever lived. For instance, the plant has been found in grave mounds of late Neolithic man in the area, dated around 5000 BC, as Hagbard mentions in the novel. It is implausible, then, that the ingenious Saba would have tried to pass this drug off as something new and magical. Some have suggested that Hassan, who was known to have travelled much in his youth, might have brought opium back from the East and mixed it with hashish. The scholarly Dr. Joel Fort goes further and argues in The Pleasure Seekers that Hassan's supercharger was wine and opium, with no marijuana products at all. Dr. John Allegro in The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross argues that both Hassan and the first Christians actually achieved the paradisical vision with the aid of Amanita muscaria, the fly agaric mushroom, which is poisonous in high doses, but psychedelic, or at least deliriant, in small quantities. The present book's suggestion, Alamut Black, an almost pure hashish with a few pinches of belladonna and stramonium, is based on 1. The strong etymological evidence that the hashishim were somehow involved with hashish. 2. The unlikelihood that wine, opium, mushrooms, or any combination thereof could account for the etymological and historical association of Hassan with hashish. 3. The reasons previously given for doubting that hashish alone is the answer. 4. The capacity of stramonium and belladonna in small doses to create intensely brilliant visual imagery beyond that of even the best grades of hashish. 5. The fact that these latter drugs were used in both the Eleusinian mysteries and in the European witch cult contemporary with Hassan. See R.E.L. Masters, Eros and Evil. Since it is not the intent of this book to confuse fact with fancy, it should be pointed out that these arguments are strong but not compelling. Many other alternatives can be suggested, such as hashish belladonna mandragora, hashish stramonium opium, hashish opium belladonna, hashish opium bufotonin, etc., etc. Medieval magicians knew how to obtain bufotonin. They took it, as Shakespeare recorded, from skin of toad. All that can be said with certainty is that Hagbard Chalene insists the correct formula is hashish belladonna stramonium in ratio 20:1:1. And we believe Hagbard most of the time. The exact link between the assassins and the European Illuminati remains unclear. We have seen, but no longer own, a John Birch Society publication arguing that the alliance between the Hashishim and the Knights Templar was consummated, and that European masonry has been more or less under Hashishim influence ever since. More likely is the theory of Darao, Op, Sit, that after the Hashishim regrouped as the non-violent Ishmaelian sect of today, the Roshinaya, Illuminated Ones, copied their old tactics and were in turn copied by the Alumbrados of Spain, and finally by the Bavarian Illuminati. The 9 stages of Hashishim training, the 13 stages in Weishaupt's Illuminati, the 32 degrees of masonry, etc., are of course arbitrary. The Theravada Buddhists have a system of 40 meditations, each leading to a definite stage of growth. Some schools of Hinduism recognize only 2 stages, dhyana, conquest of the personal ego, and samadhi, unity with the whole. One can equally well posit 5 stages or 105. The essential that is common to all these systems is that the trainee, at some point or other, is nearly scared to death. An interesting account of a traditional system used by quite primitive Mexican Indians, yet basically similar to any and all of the above, is provided by anthropologist Carlos Castaneda, who underwent training with a Yaqui shaman and recounts some of the terrors vividly in The Teachings of Don Juan, A Separate Reality, Journey to Ixtlan, and Tales of Power. Don Juan used peyote, stramonium, and a magic mushroom, probably psilocybal mexicana, the drug Tim Leary used for his first trip. The difference between these systems is that some aim to liberate every candidate and some, like Sabas and Weishaupt, deliberately encourage the majority to remain in ignorance, whereby they may with profit be endlessly exploited by their superiors in the cult. The same general game of an illuminated minority misusing a superstitious majority was characteristic of Tibet until the Chinese communist invasion broke the power of the High Lamas. A sympathetic account of the Tibetan system, which goes far towards justifying it, can be found in Alexandra David Neal's The Hidden Teachings of Tibetan Buddhism. An unsympathetic account by a sceptical fellow mystic is available in The Confessions of Aleister Crowley. Another word about Alamut Black. It is not for the inexperienced psychedelic voyager. For instance, the first time Simon Moon tried it in early 1968, he had occasion to use the men's room in the Biograph Theatre, where he had gone to see Yellow Submarine while under the influence. After his bowel movement, he reached for the toilet paper and saw, with consternation, that the first sheet hanging down off the roll was neatly stamped, Official Bavarian Illuminati, Eviger Blumenkraft. On ordinary marijuana or hashish, such illusions occur, of course, but they are not true hallucinations. They go away if you look at them hard enough. No matter how hard Simon looked at the toilet paper, it still said, Official Bavarian Illuminati, Eviger Blumenkraft. Simon went back to his seat in the theatre, badly shaken. 4 weeks afterward, he wondered if the Illuminati had some sinister reason for infiltrating the toilet paper industry, or if the whole experience were a genuine hallucination, and the first sign, as he put it, that this fucking dope is ruining my fucking head. He never solved this mystery, but eventually he stopped worrying about it. As for Hassani Sabah X and the cult of the Black Mother, the authors have been able to learn precious little about them. Since they are clearly related somehow to the assassins and the cult of Kali, Mother of Destruction, one can consider them part of the Illuminati, or Podge, side of the Sacred Cow. Since they seem to be businessmen rather than fanatics, and since Kali might be a version of Eris, one can consider them part of the Discordian or Hodge side. Mid such speculation and much mystery, they go their dark way, peddling horse and preaching some pretty funky doctrines about Whitey. Perhaps they intend to betray everybody and run off with the loot at an opportune moment. And then again, maybe they are the only really dedicated revolutionaries around. Nothing is too heavy to be knocked on its ass, and everything is cool, baby. It's the only summary of his personal philosophy that Hassani Sabah X himself would give us. He's a studly dude, and we didn't press him.